For he's always glad when everything's bad, cause then his collections are good, 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 good. His nose knows no pathway of roses, no flowers that bloom in the spring. For it's catch as catch can for the scavenger man. Posterity, where is thy? All right, we're done.
That was so good, man.
Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9. We're here in Las Vegas for Dev Intersection.
Woohoo! Julie, Vegas, baby.
How you doing, Julie?
I'm doing great.
Fantastic. So I thought we would pull you in, ask you a little bit about EF7. You've been looking at it a little bit more. What are your thoughts? I actually did some videos with the team.
I've seen them. They were fun.
And they're good developers, and they're excited
smart
to do good things.
Guys.
So what do you think about what's been going on with EF7?
Well, I love what they're doing with the EF7. It was a really, really hard decision they had to come to terms with, which sure. was dealing with the technical debt of the whole code base. Mm-hmm. And throwing it away was big.
Yeah.
But it's enabling them to do all kinds of great things, but it's also so much work for them, because not only are they working on implementing all the things they wanted to be able to implement that the new code base is enabling, but also they still have to have, you know, as much parity as possible, because
sure.
it's not backwards compatible, which is scary, really scary to a lot of people.
So I hear a lot that there it's like concept compatible. You hear that with the ASP.NET folks.
That's a great way to put it. I haven't heard that. But yeah, I mean, that's how I've been expressing it, is basically, you know, familiar APIs. I was working on my slide deck for tomorrow,
nice.
And I think one of the things that I wrote was not quite new, but definitely improved.
Interesting.
Right?
So if you have a lot of code already written, you're saying that if you port over, you just have to redo a lot of it.
Yeah, and it's I think trying to port first. Like, it's easier just to say, just don't do it, right? And there's also timing issues. My talk tomorrow is actually not going to be, it would be a lot of fun to just do like all EF7 demos, but my talk tomorrow is really guidance. Like, oh my God, what do I do?
Right.
Like, what is EF7? It's not, first of all, making sure people understand it's not the normal thing that we've had. The experience we've had with EF all these years is, you know, it's always been, it's evolutionary, not revolutionary.
Right.
And it's almost always been 100% backwards compatible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, right? Some of the, again, the experience, the conceptual experience, the concepts are definitely the same. One of the interesting things I've seen them evolve through over, I did a lot of work in the early betas and up to what was called beta 4, when we were still calling it, and it was still an alpha, but it was called beta 4 because it had to align with the NuGet package with ASP.NET. Anyway, that was in the spring up to beta 4, and now it's up to beta 8. And one of the interesting things is you could see that they were saying, oh, you know, this naming never made any sense. Let's rename this. And having, like, adding entities into a context, right? We had add, and then we got add range as an extension method that was created from somebody in the community in EF6. And they're like, well, why don't we just have an overload for add? That makes more sense, right? So they had the overload. But now they've gone back to add and add range because it will be one less problematic area for people who want to bring their code over. So it would have been nice, like, to kind of refactor those kinds of things, but it was much more important to make as much code. Not only, you know, this idea of porting it, which I'm just scared to even say it because I don't want to suggest that it's like, oh yeah, just port it, because it's going to be a lot of work.
Sure.
And if, you know, don't do that unless you have a really, really compelling reason to do it. So anyway, I can't remember if I finished that thought about the add and add range. Mm-hmm. So they changed it, so it was an overload, but then they changed it back.
Because it feels like they're trying to decide on what to do.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why one of the reasons why all along through these earlier betas, up through, you know, beta 8 now is considered feature complete.
Mm-hmm.
Not production ready yet, but feature complete. And but what they've said all the way through is, please don't write any production code with this because we're still fiddling with it and we don't know what we're going to end up with.
Right.
We're just trying to work that out. So it was really interesting, you know, that they kind of tried things, right? And then some things are like, okay, that's good. Like one thing that they tried was renaming the packages instead of being Entity Framework, Entity Framework 7 dot SQL mm-hmm. Server, Entity Framework 7 dot core, so that people could have do some EF6 and EF7 if they wanted to.
Oh,
and
see.
There was, you know, there because they were like, how do we solve this? How about this? Let's try this, you know, and then people started screaming. And so they
rolled it back.
Rolled it back again, yeah.
I think that's interesting that you're seeing a lot more. The feedback loop is much tighter now, where people will scream and say, this isn't a good idea. And Rowan will be like, yeah, you know what, you're right.
It's amazing how, I mean, it's just all that transparency that's been evolving at Microsoft over the last bunch of years.
Yeah, and it's more than that because it's not like we're saying, here's this thing, and we dump it out, and you try it, and you tell us how it works. We literally put the code out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the GitHub, yeah, and the CodePlex before that for EF6.
So let's talk a little bit about, obviously there's different scenarios when you're using any framework. There's the code first or the database first, and depending on how you do it, is either one of those going to be an easier transition path? And if it is, how so?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think one thing that needs to be cleared up is a naming problem.
Okay.
Because we started out with database first.
Right.
Take the database, reverse engineer to the visual model. And then we got the model first, which mm-hmm. kind of went away. And then we got code first, which was write your code and then generate the database from that. But then we got the ability to start with a database and create code, reverse engineer
yeah.
to get to code first, even though it's the database first. Right.
Oh, so I see. It's database, very subtle.
Yeah. So database first. When you hear database first, most people like who do a lot with Entity Framework, the first thing they will imagine is the visual model. Because so the naming database first really has always referred to start with a database and create a visual model.
Okay.
What it needs to mean is start with a database and come up with a model, however the model is.
I see.
Because the visual model is going away.
Of course.
No visual. No EDMX. At least not out of the box. Uh-huh. Third-party providers will probably, you know, fill in some blanks there. Mm-hmm. So no designer, no EDMX. But you still can start with a database.
Right.
You can still reverse engineer from a database to what we call code first, code only. They originally called it code only.
Interesting.
And then they called it code first because it sounded good. Database yeah. first, model first, code first.
Sure.
So the visual model, the EDMX, is going away. So the easier transition is the one that we know of as code first, regardless of how you get to the code first, whether you reverse engineer from an existing database or start by writing code.
That's interesting. So if you have an Entity Framework 6 sort of product you're working on and you use the visual model, you should just stay with Entity Framework 6 until you move up.
Absolutely, and that's the guidance from the team also, which, you know, you don't write production code, right? Like, this is going to change quickly because the RC is going to come out supposedly in November, and then on the roadmap for ASP.NET 5 is Q1 release, Q1 2016 release. So they're still saying, you know, don't write production code with it, and if you are going to write production code with it, just focus on these ASP.NET 5 apps.
Sure.
But if you're doing something new and it's bigger than what you would do with an ASP.NET 5 app and you need more of the features of EF6 mm-hmm. earlier that aren't yet in EF7, that won't be in that initial release, then do the work in EF6. But pay attention to what is in EF7 because you can still design with have things designed in a way that the move to EF7 is going to be easier. One of the programming concepts that will be helpful there is separation of concerns.
Right.
Right? Don't write everything in a big blob because when you want to change it, then you've got a big blob to deal with. So if you make things in smaller units, smaller projects, really narrowly focused, and make sure, you know, you write the code that you know, this is gonna, I'm gonna have to transition this eventually to EF7 because I'm really excited about the things that are coming in EF7, so it's going to be worth it.
Sure.
Right? So make that as small as you can, because then you don't have all this stuff attached
yeah.
to it. You're not going to be really pulling things apart.
So that's cool. And so it feels like there is a path forward, but if you have something that's just working, I think they're still going to be doing release maintenance.
Absolutely.
Maintenance
yeah. As a matter of fact, I think it was in their blog or somewhere on the GitHub site, they said, you know, kind of rest assured, you know, we're working really hard right now to get EF7 out so that it can release with ASP.NET 5 because they have to. And then as soon as that's out, we're going to go back and do some maintenance stuff on EF6.
Okay.
But all the big innovation is going to be in EF7 going forward. But EF6 is going to be around. It's going to be supported. I actually, the talk that I'm doing tomorrow is a kind of an updated version of one I did in the spring at a conference, and afterwards somebody said, you should have called that talk Why Not to Use Entity Framework 7, because
wow.
I was really warding people off, especially at that time.
Yeah, it was early.
Just look at it, play with it, see what it feels like, keep an eye on the code base, but don't commit any code to it yet,
right.
please. And you may not want to even, you know, unless you're hot and heavy to do an ASP.NET 5 project because you want some of those features and the way EF7 will look along, you know, that comes out mm-hmm. along with that. It's going to be EF7, definitely. It originally was going to be kind of this pre-release, but it's going to be the RTM.
I see.
So there's going to be this initial RTM that there's really not a lot of reason to use it outside of an AS, you know, to benefit
right.
from ASP.NET 5. It will work with full .NET framework, right? It will work with universal
Windows
10 apps, right? So UWP. So that might be a reason you'd want to use it, because it's got SQLite
mm-hmm.
and there might be PostgreSQL. And I don't know when NPGQ, I forget uh-huh. that's who's working on it. I don't know when that's going to be done. So those might be compelling reasons to use it. But, you know, if you've got some huge, you know, just this vast enterprise app that you need to do a lot of different things with, maybe better to wait till there's more parity.
Sure.
But it's not going to be 100% parity. There's things that they've got done that are going to be in EF7.0.0.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole set of things that they're absolutely, you know, will be the things that have to be in there before they say, okay, now this is going to be the default EF7.
Right.
Right? At that point, then EF6 will still be around, but then when you say, you know, install Entity Framework, that's what you're going to get. No .pre.
I see.
So it's actually getting easier for me to comprehend how to share that path with people.
Okay.
And the other thing I think is, you know, with existing code with EF6, you don't have to upgrade, right? You don't have to upgrade. Now, you may see some stuff in EF7 that says, gosh, you know, in this area of my application that we have to, that's constantly in motion, we're changing that a lot, and there's some really good stuff in EF7 that could really benefit from, then I would say, then, you know, take that, really compartmentalize it so that it is separate from the rest of your logic and your processes.
Sure.
And then upgrade that.
Put it in, yeah. Sort of like a vertical partition across your
yeah.
app.
Yeah, but then you've got to be careful about assemblies and
yeah.
and that. So you just have things, you know, all the stuff I've been doing with DDD will kind of help with those ideas, right? Really thinking about bounded context and really thinking a lot about, you know, where can I make these real boundaries between logic and my application?
Sure. So this is interesting. And now traditionally, I always talk to you about Entity Framework 7. Yeah. But listen.
I'm a one-trick pony, people think.
No, it's not true, because recently, and this happens to all of us devs, we work on this one thing, and then realize, I'm gonna go look at this. You did something similar to that recently, right?
Yeah, actually, it was because of Entity Framework.
Okay.
It was really funny. I was redoing one of my courses for Pluralsight. I was doing a Getting Started. I know it seems really silly with EF7 around the corner to do EF6 courses, but Entity Framework 6 is going to be around for a long time.
Sure.
So I wanted to, I've got one and I'm going to do, I've got a set that I'm going to do. So I want some EF6 courses on Pluralsight that will just stay and, you know, kind of be the de facto instead of going and kind of piecing together all the older stuff. So I already did the Getting Started with Entity Framework 6. And I like to show it in use, right? So I wrote a little, probably a contests and some console apps, and I probably did a little MVC app. I can't even remember, but I did a web API, right, with ASP.NET. Oh, MVC 4, what's released already. So I did a little web API, and then I was like, well, it's so boring to just use tests all the time to demonstrate it. Because I wanted to show that the web API actually worked.
Yeah, of course.
Right? So I had just been at a conference where Rob Eisenberg had been, and he was presenting on Aurelia. And I have never done any JavaScript. Well, I mean, I've done
JavaScript-y things.
But I've never done Angular. Right. I don't know these client frameworks.
Me neither.
I don't know about Node. I can spell it.
Sure.
And I can spell JS, JavaScript. I always have a hard time remembering that capital S.
Sure.
Anyway, so I just said,
why not?
How hard could it be?
Why not?
What the heck?
And was it? I mean,
well,
what did it feel like you were jumping off the deep end?
Yeah, the pain for me was not Aurelia. The pain was, and by the way, I've heard Rob Eisenberg say it enough times that I realize he says Aurelia, not Aurelia.
Yeah.
As you'll hear.
Yeah,
you're be
yeah, we're having him hopefully tomorrow or after.
So the pain wasn't really coming from Aurelia. The pain was from having absolutely no experience in JavaScript client frameworks, like none. Nothing. and then so I did that, and the basic idea was that I created the front end, and it just made some HTTP calls directly to the web API, and so I could see some data and update some data through the web API. Then I decided I'd been playing with DocumentDB and Azure DocumentDB, and Azure DocumentDB has REST capability. So far, all I'd done with that was, coincidentally, totally different project, done a web API using their client framework for DocumentDB.
Got it.
But I knew there was this, it's RESTful. It's not that it has a REST API, it is RESTful. It's a service.
Yeah.
So I was like, that would be cool to take that front end that I built in Aurelia, instead of making HTTP calls to my .NET web API with Entity Framework 6, to make HTTP calls directly into my DocumentDB service. Well, it turned out, and I found out the hard way, which is, running into this wall, running into that wall,
boom.
Bam! Yeah. And nobody knew, right? Nobody put these two things together. There was just really nothing except some, sample code on MSDN, and actually some good samples. Their documentation has been really good. It was just I was doing something new, so it turned out it just really wasn't ready to be used that particular way. One reason is because you've got keys you've got to deal with, right? So you can't just stick the keys in the client to access the credentials, right? Like, so all right, and then it was like, well, I guess it would be easier to do web API, but I was like, I already did that. That's boring. I should do something else. Well, what's this Node client they have? Like,
oh my goodness. So you went full Node Aurelia. Oh my.
And there was not a lot of existing stuff there. So there was an existing example that Ryan Krakor built using their Node client. So the Node that is created to they've already got the stuff to interact with DocumentDB. So he did that, but he had a front end with Jade, which is a different framework. So I studied that really, really deeply and carefully and studied it, tried to understand what was going on, because I don't even understand Node. What I wanted to do was take the Node part and attach it to Aurelia, right? But Aurelia works in a very different way than Jade. So it wasn't just like, oh, doop, boop, right? It was not like that. Oh, and then I had to debug Node.
Oh, and that's tough.
Right, like I actually know, thanks to WordBell, I actually know how to use like Chrome debugging tools and IE debugging tools for the client side. And I was like, how do I get in there? I don't know how to get in
there.
Where's
the breakpoints?
So I'm like, I use Visual Studio, right? So I'm like, oh, there's this Node add-in, Node tooling for that. So I install that, and then there was this whole, oh, you have to import the whole project. And it was like, took 15 minutes to import, and it was like,
that's too much.
And everybody's like, you should use Visual Studio Code. I'm like, no, I can't learn another new thing right now.
That's too many things.
So I went through a whole day. This is my norm. Push back. No, yes. Like that guy in I made the same joke in .NET Rocks, and I couldn't remember the name of the show, The Vicar of Dibley, the guy who goes, no, yes.
Nice.
Right? So I do that. I'm like, no, it's too much. And I was like, all right, okay. And then I use it, and I'm like, oh, that was easy.
Yeah, but you're going from doing an Any Framework sample, right, using Web API, C Sharp.
And it led me to doing Aurelia with Node.
Which is like, you know, orthogonal almost.
Yeah, but you know me.
Yeah, of course. Got to try something new, right?
Like, oh, well, okay, we'll try that. How hard could it be?
So did it end up being hard? Was
it? It was really hard, but the difficulty was that I was so unfamiliar with all these things. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm also having to use all these other tools that I'm not used to using, like NPM, right, and Grunt. Gulp Watch and
Bower.
This and oh, I haven't touched Bower yet. Okay, oh, no, so
one more thing, sorry.
I know. So that was really a lot of the challenge. One really wonderful thing was I had some awesome help from some of the core team members.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. One of them lives right near me, although not close enough that he's like 50 miles away, so it's not like he could just.
Yeah, relatively speaking, that's close.
But, you know, there was Skype. Patrick Walters also spent a lot of time. He actually tech reviewed some of my stuff. He took what I was working on because I had a couple of places where I was confused, so we put them on GitHub, and he made some changes, and then we went back and forth. And then there were some things I still wanted to implement in it. I was very proud of this. So I really researched, like found blogs he had written, different documentation, and then I implemented them. I wanted to do it the Aurelia way, right? I didn't want to just hack it with some JavaScript, jQuery, how I knew. Yeah. And I was so proud because after I put it up on GitHub, he looked at it, he said, that's just how I would have done it.
I love that feeling.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Anyway. So what were your main learning points on going off on this road? And then also, when will the course be out so we can see this whole thing coming
together? I still have been so busy. I keep promising Pluralsight that I got to put this, I got to find an angle, right?
Sure.
I'm going to do a course because I want to do something different. Like, I'm not in a position to do a, you know, getting started with Aurelia. First of all, Scott Allen's you know, he's on that, he understands that, and Brian Noyes is doing stuff with Aurelia too. So I definitely want to do something that's kind of from my perspective. Well, I've written, like my first article that I wrote for MSDN for Data Points was on the data binding, right? Because that was interesting to me, and data was an excuse.
Data's in there.
It's about data, right? And then, you know, about interacting with the document DB also. So, it's really fun, you know. And then in the meantime, I'm like, oh, I got to do my EF7 talk, and this Beta 8 just came out, and like, oh my God, it's totally different than Beta 4. I had to learn, and watching those videos was so helpful, and I just had to learn. And the other thing I had to do was just try everything. Like, okay, like, what is it like to do a UWP? Oh, new learning curve. Actually, I had a Windows Phone one that I'd already done, so I was able to transition that. So yeah, then I had to jump back to EF7 and just like cram.
It's really heartening for me that such a fabulous, well-groomed nose for stuff.
Groomed?
No, I mean groomed in terms of, you know your stuff. And it's like, it feels good that sometimes I run around and bump into things too. And so if you do it, then maybe it's okay that I bump around all the time. So.
What's the fun otherwise?
I know,
I mean, like I said, I could have just taken, I already had a web API that I wrote to interact with DocumentDB.
Sure.
Right? I could have just used that.
Yeah, but sometimes you're just like, I wonder what this is like.
Yeah, I want to do it the cool way.
Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us. By the way.
Always fun.
Dev Intersections, you've come a lot, haven't you? You've been here like,
yeah.
Tell us about Dev Intersections, what you think about it.
Oh, well, I love this, and it's got a long history of the management and the speakers and high quality and really fun interaction with the attendees. Love it.
That's awesome. Well,
yeah,
it's good to
be
here.
I always will come out to this conference.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us. We're here with Julie Lerman, who sometimes, not very often, bumps around some stuff like I do all the time. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.